This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Tuesday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. So the ratings are in for the Sweet 16, and no surprise at all, St. Peter's, the Peacocks, and their win against Purdue on Friday night was one of the highest-rated Sweet 16 games of all time. We love the Cinderella story, and we love it in all sports. And I've said many, many times, I am one of those people that likes Cinderella only to a point, but I do understand it is a more compelling story than your standard blue blood showdowns. College basketball gets more niche as you get more and more of the blue bloods into the sport. But when you have stories that go beyond the normal Kansases and Kentuckys and Dukes and North Carolinas and all of these teams that consistently are in the top of the sport, then you draw in another group of people that are like, I like basketball. I may not be the biggest college guy, but man, I can get totally in to this story of this small school from Jersey City. And that's what America did. That is, it's really no surprise where the St. Peter's Peacocks took the ratings for this NCAA tournament. But that being said, I wonder if this means that we are encouraging more Cinderella stories. Will the selection committee, for example, in the future, add a few more mid-majors into the mix just to keep it going in that kind of idea? You could always grab a whole bunch of teams from the ACC, a whole bunch of teams from the Big Ten, a whole bunch of teams from the Pac-12, Big 12, and SEC. But what if you sprinkled in a few teams that had really, really good seasons from, let's say, the OVC or even the SoCon? And I'm not talking like second place with 18 wins. I'm talking like second place with like 28 wins, you know, 25 wins, whatever it may be. What about bringing in some more of those teams into the mix, even if their conference isn't strong? If you feel like, you know, maybe this tournament needs a kind of a boost. Nevertheless, as we talked about yesterday, congratulations to St. Peter's for a remarkable tournament. And it was enjoyable to watch all the way through, even though North Carolina beat them by double digits and beat them handily. It was really fun. Now it's time to get to the Final Four. And Saturday's game between Duke and North Carolina may be one of the greatest games we've ever seen. That's next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Okay, guys, I'm gonna be honest with you. I am a little bit cynical in our sports world, and it's a lot of it is because over the years I've kind of gotten caught up in a hype that led to nowhere. I've seen manufactured hype for things that don't deserve it. And so I don't get all sort of hallmarkish, if you will, when we have certain moments in sports. I tend to be a little bit more low-keyed on that. But I got to tell you, this Duke-North Carolina game Saturday night, I think checks off all the boxes. If there was one event that I really feel like deserves sort of the sentimental angle to it, deserves all of the Wright Thompson essays, if you will, it's this. And, like, for example, I'm a Masters fan. I love the Masters. It's my favorite golf tournament. It's one of my favorite events of the year. I think that its promotion and its self of entitlement is kind of ridiculous. I really do. I think it's a little silly. It's a golf tournament. It's not a presidential election. It's not the most important thing in the history of the world. But that's what it does. But I think you're going to get a lot of hype for this game. And you're going to see a lot of sort of vignettes, video essays on Tobacco Road and North Carolina and the history of this rivalry and the people that have gone through this rivalry. And they're going to be very important people, right? Whether it's politicians or actors or singers or celebrities of all types talking about growing up in that area of the country. And it's all about Duke, North Carolina, and you can't get away from Duke, North Carolina, and all of those things. And Dean Smith and Michael Jordan, Mike Krzyzewski, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, all of those things are going to be rolled in to the game coming up this weekend. And that's not a terrible thing. Again, I'm a cynical guy. I kind of roll my eyes at kind of that stuff. But the reality of it is there are certain times where a sporting moment deserves that level of sugarcoating. And I think this is the case. It'll be cheesy. It'll be warm. It'll be poetic. It'll be romantic, right? All those sort of soft adjectives to describe this rivalry when it really is hardcore. This is going to be tough basketball. There's a lot on the line for both schools. There is a legacy of those schools that are on the line. North Carolina may be under the first year of Hubert Davis, but they definitely want to end the career of Mike Krzyzewski on a Tar Heel note. And the Duke Blue Devils want to continue their coach's run through this tournament into a championship game appearance. And the pressure is definitely on Duke's side. Duke had already beaten them in Chapel Hill, but it was North Carolina that ended the Cameron party at the end of the season. And I think that this does deserve the hype that it's going to get. You know, when you look around sports, one of the things that we draw out of sports, sometimes we manufacture it and sometimes it's organic, but we always try to pull out a rivalry. We do it in every sport, to be honest with you. NASCAR, golf, even sports that are individuals, where individuals are performing. We try to find a rivalry on the track, on the course, on the tennis court, whatever. When it comes to teams, it's almost automatic that we do that. We take any team and we find a rival. If it's up the road, like in this case, whether it's across the state, whether it's across the border, it doesn't matter. We always take a team and say, who is the team you hate the most? And when you have a situation where a certain rivalry has been brought to the national spotlight because of the people involved in it over the last 40 years, then that's why Saturday night is going to be one of the most watched basketball games, but even between any college basketball game or the NBA. This is going to be as epic of a sporting event, no matter what the score is and no matter who wins. Because of what it's going to be. Sometimes Michigan and Ohio State isn't for an important game. Sometimes it's just a rivalry. Alabama and Auburn, as I think that's the best rivalry in college football. I like Michigan and Ohio State, don't get me wrong. But I love the Iron Bowl, and I have no dog in the fight. I have no dog in that fight. But as a person that is embedded in SEC football, there is nothing like that weekend. I told you that story when I was driving back Thanksgiving weekend through the state of Alabama, through the back, not the back roads, but through state roads. I wasn't on the highway. We were kind of cutting through Alabama to get to Birmingham to go up to Nashville where we live. And I was driving through that state when the Iron Bowl was being played. And I had the highway to myself. I had the state roads to myself. I was hardly anybody on the road. And I knew where they all were. Right? They were all watching the Iron Bowl. Ohio State was watching the Iron Bowl. I love that rivalry. But can you sell that rivalry in Washington? Can you sell that rivalry in Vermont? How about Arizona? Maybe if there's something on the line, like if the winner of that game played for the SEC championship, maybe. Duke, North Carolina is separated by 8 miles, but it somehow has permeated all throughout college basketball that everybody in the country knows when they play during the regular season, it's a major deal. It's a big deal. Even if one team is down, the other team's up, both teams are okay, both teams are great. Now take this game take what it has meant and put it on the best stage it could be on other than the national championship. And now you've got what Saturday night is going to be. And everything in the past 40 years, if you follow college basketball and you know the history of all of the players that have gone through both programs, this rivalry has been bloody. It has been hate-filled. It has been exciting. It has been dull. It has been everything. And now, for the first time, it is in a tournament. This is the first time that Duke and North Carolina are playing a game against each other where the winner moves on and the loser stops playing basketball for the season. Both of these teams during the regular season will play each other and then go on to the ACC tournament. And when they play each other in the ACC tournament, one will go one way in the NCAA tournament, the other goes another way. Or if one doesn't go, one goes like North Carolina, you might even go to the NIT, whatever. But for the most part, they continue on after they play each other. This is the first time where one of the schools can say, and we ended your season. We've never had that happen. It does warrant all of the hype. The other game, unfortunately, just does not. Kansas and Villanova is going to be a standard blue blood Final Four game like a bunch of others in the past. But what happens Saturday night between the Tar Heels and the Blue Devils could be remembered forever and should probably be regardless of the game, even if the game is lousy, because of the Coach K element to it. Now, if Coach K wasn't retiring, it would still be a big deal. But because he is retiring, it should be the most watched basketball game we've had in 10 years. If St. Peter's and their fun Cinderella story can give us high ratings, I certainly think a program that has got more hate towards it in the final run of Coach K against its deepest hated rival should generate that same level. And you know what? I hope to see in the stands a lot of the people in the past that have made this rivalry so great. I hope Michael Jordan finds his way there. I don't know if he will, but I hope he does. I hope there are other Tar Heels and Blue Devils in the history of the sport find their way to New Orleans to be a part of this. I know if I was a player on Dean Smith's teams or Roy Williams' teams or even Bill Guthridge's teams, or I played for Coach K, I would contact anybody I could to get a ticket to be inside the Superdome. Because I would absolutely want to be a part of that. Again, I'm not a guy that jumps on every hype train that this industry, the sports industry, can produce. Sometimes I roll my eyes and gag at some of the ridiculousness of the promotions of some sporting events. But not this one. Not this one. If Marty Smith does a poetic piece about some barber shop in Durham, North Carolina, where they argue basketball 365, I'll watch it. If Wright Thompson wants to write a poetic piece about how Duke rising up in the 1980s was similar to an azalea plant and North Carolina was like a kudzu that was growing through the South, I'm for it. I don't know what else to say about it other than sit back and watch, because I think it's going to be epic. I think it's going to be fantastic. And more importantly, I think it's going to be historic. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll talk more about the Final Four. By the way, the women's Final Four is all set. Gino Auriemma and UConn are back. A double overtime game. I was watching the ending of that with my daughter, and because she likes women's basketball. And we were watching that. And I know women's basketball and men's basketball are two totally different things. And I know that the talent level, in terms of the talent pool, is not as deep as the men's, of course. But, man, boy, it feels like Gino Auriemma has just been doing this forever, hasn't he? Takes these UConn teams and just gets to the Final Four. All right, we'll talk more about that in terms of basketball. We'll also get into the NFL as well, as the owners' meetings are propping up another way to do overtime. We got that for you as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on SportsMap Radio. All right, so the owners are meeting down in Florida, and there's been new proposals for changing in overtime, which I knew was going to happen. There's always going to be, whenever you have an overtime that people go, oh boy, I don't know about this now, then there's always one team that is like looking at it and going, you know, I wouldn't mind changing that because I could see myself on the losing end of that situation. But it takes a lot of votes in order to get new law rules in place, right? It takes 24, and that's hard to do. But I found it interesting. Mike Tomlin, the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach, had said, because the coaches are down there too, it's owners meeting, coaches meeting. Mike Tomlin said he doesn't fear sudden death. So I'm not afraid of sudden death. Never have been. And while I appreciate the sentiment, because Mike Tomlin's a tough guy, Mike Tomlin, whenever he seems to speak, he always seems to kind of wants to remind you that he's, you know, he's kind of on the tougher side. But that's not really the point, whether you fear sudden death or not. The overall reason that they don't want to use sudden death is because even though statistically it seemed to show about, it was a little more than 50%, but it wasn't like 80-20 that if you won the toss, you would win sudden death overtime. But it just, the perception was always there. Kickers are better. You don't have to go that far down the field. You know, then you can get into field goal range and whatnot. But Tomlin is saying, you know, hey, look, I never had a problem with sudden death. I think the problem with overtime is I don't think there is a real solid way to do it without everybody being happy. Right? We talk about, if you get the ball and you score a touchdown, give the ball to the other team. Okay, fine. But what if they score a touchdown? What happens after that? So let's just use the Kansas City-Buffalo game, for example. It's a playoff game, so it's a little different. You play to win, you play until there's a winner. So a regular season game would probably be better for this this conversation. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, it's Bills-Chiefs. Kansas City goes down, scores a touchdown. Now Bills get the ball, they score a touchdown. What do you do after that? Do you go to sudden death? Well, is sudden death more fair after both teams have had the ball? Or is it still completely an unfair way to determine the winner of a football game? Because, to me, sudden death, it's not really sudden death. I mean, both teams have had an opportunity to play offense and defense. So it's just, you know, I guess you could still call it that way, but to me, sudden death is next score wins at the start of the overtime period. But if you give the possession to both teams, let's say Ron and I are playing, he scores, I score, and then Ron gets the ball, does he get a chance to win the game? Do I get a chance to win the game if he scores?
Yeah, when does it end?
Like, when does it end? Because I'll tell you right now, if you adjust it too much, you're going to see a lot more ties in the NFL. Because in the postseason, they'll play until it's over. Right? Because that's, you got to do that. But in the regular season, they only have 10 minutes. And in 10 minutes of action in the NFL, you can have three possessions. Four possessions. What is the fair way to do it if you're looking for complete and utter, nobody has any right to complain fairness? Because I think that's really hard to figure out. Did the NFL want more ties? They already lowered the time in the overtime from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. Do they want more tie games? Are they okay with more tie? I know I hate tie games in the NFL. Forget it. I don't even like it in hockey, and I'm not even a hockey fan. Like, I love the shootout. But it's like still like 3-6-1. It's like 3-6-7. Like, how do I figure that? Oh, it's points. Okay, are we going to just do that now? If you want to make it so that it's fair, I think the best way to do it is to give everybody one shot at the ball, and then after that, unfortunately, sudden death. And if you don't like it, well, there's nothing we can do. Like, at some point, you got to stop playing football. At some point, you got to – somebody's got to win. I'll tell you right now, the one thing that they won't do, which I always thought was interesting, would be interesting, is what if you just said to everybody in overtime, we're playing 10 minutes of football. Good luck. Like, when the clock strikes zero, that's when it's over. But nobody will want to do that. You've just played 60 minutes of football. You don't want to play 10 more, do you? So I don't know what the owners are going to come up with. I think it's going to be tossed about. I don't think any new proposal is going to change. I think there's unfortunately these moments where you get a playoff game where the Buffalo Bills don't get a chance to get the football in overtime, and that's just too bad. You know, but they're not the first team that this has happened to. Plenty of playoff teams have lost in overtime. Plenty of playoff teams were lost in the sudden death overtime. That's just the way the ball bounces. So, but one thing that did get proposed, it did get passed. The Buffalo Bills are going to be getting a new stadium. So the Buffalo Bills, the Pegulas, who own the Bills, the stadium's going to cost $1.4 billion, apparently, this latest whatever stadium proposal they have. Good God, $1.4 billion for these stadiums. Remember when $1 billion was like, forget it.
Monopoly
it's a Taj
money.
Mahal. Yeah. It's like when Jerry Jones built his for $1 billion back in, what, 2008, 2009, whatever it was? It was like, billion? What? $1 billion? What is it, made of gold? What are we talking about? Now all of them are billion, $2 billion, $4 billion, whatever.
Can I be honest with you with this Bill Stadium? I'm a little upset.
I am too.
Not because
of the same reason I am?
Probably not.
Right.
You know, my reasoning is that the city of Buffalo, Erie County, the state of New York, NFL, Pegulas, I mean, they all were able to come together almost seamlessly and agree to, hey, yes, let's build a new stadium.
Right.
Meanwhile, my team kept going after proposal after proposal after proposal.
Oh, I gotcha.
And finally said, you know what would be better for us to play in a soccer stadium and then rent out the other team's stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. You know what? I understand the politics of this. The power is in the hands of the team, right? They threaten to move. They threaten to go somewhere else.
Yep.
Fans hate it because everybody says, why should we pay for a billionaire's stadium? I don't think I've ever met one person. Have you ever met one person that's like, no, absolute taxpayers should be playing for this?
Yeah.
I don't think I've met one person that's like,
I'd be more
than happy to pay more property taxes to build a new stadium for the Titans. Nobody says that. Right? But you know what happens? And we'll get more into this because we're heading into break, but we'll get more into this, is that the NFL knows what the business that they're in. Nobody wants to lose their team, and no politician wants to be on the clock when the team leaves, right? So they understand that. Politicians could say to the public, I'm sorry the Buffalo Bills are now moving, but I wouldn't stand for them charging you, you're raising your taxes to build a stadium. Because the same people that would say, I'm not interested in you raising my property taxes for a new stadium, would then still look at the politician and go, yeah, but you're the guy that cost us the Bills. It's like a catch-22. There's no way to win. So you have to come up with these sort of proposals where it's like, you guys pay some portion of it, we'll pitch in this amount. Is that okay? And then the NFL goes, $850 million? Yeah, we can come up with the other. $550 million? Yeah, that's good. Don't worry about it. And that's how it works. And they get it every time. They get it all the time.
Almost every time.
Well, that's right. Or your team ends up playing in a soccer stadium right up the road. It's crazy.
We'll show you.
Exactly. All right, we'll come back. More on that, because I do want to dive into that a little bit more as we continue this morning. It is Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
Thank you. Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We were just talking about the Buffalo Bills. They're going to be getting a new stadium. Construction will start 2026. Why not tomorrow?
That in itself is incredible to me.
Right? You're going to break ground 4 years from now to start building the stadium?
I mean,
when are you going to build it? Like, why not? Is the
don't
land,
they have a spot picked out?
Don't you have a spot picked out? Why don't you just start? I hope to God they're not tearing down like low income housing to build a stadium, right? And they're like, well, we're gonna start kicking people out. It's gonna take about 4 years before we remove people from their home.
They're gonna build it on that little island that's in between the Horseshoe Falls and American Falls and Niagara Falls.
Do you ever see if you live in Buffalo or you've lived in Buffalo? I don't mean this in the wrong way because I think that city is amazing. I love Buffalo. Everybody I know who has lived in Buffalo,
they don't complain.
Loves it.
Yeah, they've never complained about it.
And people who leave miss it. Like, I have friends who got jobs in Buffalo, like, hey, man, I'm moving to Buffalo. I'm working at the WGR or whatever stations are up there. And I always think, like, they'll do their 3 or 4 years and then they'll go on.
It's like the military.
They're there 15 years. I lived in Las Vegas with a guy named Tim Graham. He worked for the Las Vegas Sun, and I took over his job with the minor league basketball team because he left the newspaper. He worked PR and media with the basketball team, and I took that position. And he left for Buffalo, and he's like, yeah, man, we went and moved from Vegas to Buffalo. Still there.
No
still
snow there to like 800 feet of snow.
Yep. 20-plus years later, he's still there. So people love Buffalo. But every time I see a Bills game at home, I think to myself, that's a dump stadium. They need a new modern stadium. That looks like an old stadium. And it kind of is. And so I'm glad they're getting a new stadium. But you know what they won't be getting? A dome. They want no business with a dome. They love that cold. Bring in that wind. Bring in that snow. We ain't covering this up. We're not chicken. We're not playing indoors. That's a Minnesota thing.
That's right.
We're not doing that. We're playing. We are playing outside.
Well,
like the Patriots game, that game where Patriots ran the ball 50 times or whatever it was. Threw it 3 times because it was gusts. They were like 30 mile an hour winds.
I mean,
Buffalo's that's what we're doing.
You know, it's not going to snow too much there.
Right. Yeah, right. No, not at all. Not at all. There's probably some sort of civic pride that the whole city goes out to shovel the stadium.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you get
bring
one.
Bring your shovels and shovel us out here.
A shirtless fan in the dome during the winter in Buffalo just wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Now, in this new stadium, I hope they do this. They need to have a section that pays homage to tables.
Gotcha. Yeah. I do too. I think that'd be great. Homage to tables. Yeah, couldn't you put some could you bronze a table in the foyer of this thing?
Something.
Yeah.
Gotcha. They have arguably, I think, the greatest fan name.
Bill's Mafia.
I mean, I'm trying to think of other fans' name, but,
Dog Pound.
Dog Pound, that's a good one. The Hogs.
Cheesehead.
That's boring.
Is that boring?
Yeah, the Black Hole is a good one.
That's not bad. Black Hole is a good one.
But Bill's Mafia.
Bill's Mafia is great.
It's fantastic.
Epic. Absolutely.
And the fact that they come with their own stigma. Like the Black Hole, you just know that's going to be a bunch of face-painted fans.
By the way, Robert on Facebook is telling me that they're going to try to open in 2026. I thought they weren't going to start building until 2026. So I'm checking the story right now. I might have read that wrong. So I do apologize.
Yeah, I hope they. Try to open in 2026. I say okay.
If you're
waiting 4 years to put a shovel in the ground, why?
Oh, okay. Here's what it is. New stadium will be located across the street from Highmark Stadium.
the team's practice facility. Work has already begun prepping the site. Formal groundbreaking is expected to take place in spring of 2023.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so it's in 1 year. Okay. So,
but still,
right.
Why,
so I did misread that wrong. So
why 2023? Why are we waiting a year?
Why not today?
Yeah.
Since you've got the money, why not today? Right?
Construction crew, if they know the check is coming, they'll get to work.
Yeah. Listen, you know how, like, people go to Washington, like, you know how, like, you hear stories of some doctor or some farmer or somebody's like, I'm running for Congress because I'm just sick and tired of Washington politicians not listening to the people, right? So they run for Congress and then they win and then they go to Washington and they realize, holy cow, there's like a weird method to the madness, and they get caught up in the system and they realize, oh, it isn't as easy as I thought it was going to be when I got here. It's complex. You need favors. You got to do other favors. You got to vote for bills you don't want to vote for to get other favors. And it's a real complex machinery of corruption. That's kind of the way I feel about this NFL stadium sham that has gone on every year. It's like there's no easy answer to it. You're right, Ron. People in San Diego didn't want to pay the money for Qualcomm or a new stadium, and the Chargers just left. They just do that. They just leave. The Raiders, the same thing. Oh, you don't want to build us something new for Oakland Alameda Coliseum? Bye. We're taking off. There's another city that will build us a brand new state-of-the-art place. And I know I've said this many times. That's one of the reasons I thought L.A. didn't have a team for 20 years. It was the carrot on the end of a stick for every single owner that wanted new stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We'll go to L.A.
They need a team.
You don't want to build us? Hey, Indianapolis, build us a new stadium. Hey, Pittsburgh, build us a new stadium. Hey, you know, people, build us a new stadium. Otherwise, we're leaving. Los Angeles. It's wide open for us. People of St. Louis, same thing. When we had Benjamin Hockman on, same thing. Stan Kroenke was like, I'm done with this. Bye.
I mean, we could almost point to almost, I would say, every NFL team, maybe outside like the Cowboys, Steelers.
Yeah, outside Packers. Of the real, like the Packers can't move because they're publicly owned.
Yeah.
But like every owner has like toyed with the possibility
of moving to L.A.
Like we'll just move to L.A. maybe. I don't know. We'd hate to even think about it. And like really, you hate to even think about it, but you're threatening it. It's almost like when you watch like a show where there's like a veiled little threat. They're like, I mean, I would hate for that to get out, would it? And you're like, are you threatening me? And you're like, the TV show. Same thing here with these owners. They're like, well, Los Angeles is sunny. Why are you saying that? I don't know. Just thought I'd bring it up. It's just sunny and nice, and a lot of people live there. And that has nothing to do with this conversation. Oh, does it? You tell me. It's like it's a vague way of implying that if you don't pass this bill, I'm moving the team. And so the Bills, even they didn't threaten to move to, like, L.A. or anything crazy like that. They were going to move to
Toronto.
They were talking about moving to Toronto. Like, they were going to move to another country.
Yeah.
If they couldn't get a new stadium in New York. The New York goes, hey, all right, we'll give you $850 million. Now, the good news of this is this. For now, New York is paying $850 million. Apparently, the state has made an agreement with the NFL and the Buffalo Bills that as this develops, you are responsible for any overcosts, which are likely to incur due to inflation and the cost of, you know, everything rising and delays and all that other stuff. Which, by the way, when you're building a stadium in Buffalo, New York, what could possibly delay your construction?
Yeah.
Every day is 75 degrees
Think about it.
What could possibly delay the construction of a brand new stadium?
For 3 to 4 months, is the construction crew on vacation?
Right.
Maybe
exactly.
That's why. You know what? Let's retract our original thought. Maybe it does take 4 years to build anything there.
Probably.
Because you got to take 3 months off, 4 months off, because you're not building in 800 feet of snow.
Who wants to build a building, out at a stadium, when it's minus 13 degrees outside and the wind is blowing 35 miles an hour? Who's getting up on scaffolding to put together a stadium when the wind is blowing 40 miles an hour?
Yep.
Right? Like the common, like, you know, the news in Buffalo is constantly like, breaking story weather pattern coming in that'll shut down the city for 3 days. We've got that coming up in 10 minutes. Meteorologist John Simmons. Right? And then John Simmons is like, here's the high pressure coming off the lake. We're going to get snow. Lots and lots of snow. Lots of snow. Should shut us down, I don't know, 4 or 5 days.
I say this.
Before the streets are open again.
You know,
and they're going to build a stadium. Again, like they're gonna round the clock construction on a brand new stadium. We're lucky to see that thing by 2030.
Would now be the right time to start just pouring concrete so it'll dry?
Right, right, exactly.
And then you take a few months off. Forget about painting the stadium.
So it's so funny because, like, Josh Allen is probably looking at that place going, "I will never play in there. I'll be an old man. I'll be in
traded.
The Ring of Honor." Yeah. They'll trade me because I'm too old to throw the football by the time this thing is done. This thing is built. Golly. But, man, good job, Pegulas. You got $850 million from the state of New York and Erie County.
I mean, think about it, though. You know, it's the only football team in the state of New York, so it's not like they're, you know, it's like, well, we got three teams.
Oh, that's true. That's a very good point. The governor... I kind of forgot her name, but she took over for Andrew Cuomo. It's not like she's like, well, we got two others we have to build stadiums for.
Quickly reminded, no, you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. It's going to be fantastic. And by the way, Buffalo fans, I am really glad that team did not move to Toronto. You know what? I know you're heartbroken that the Chargers moved, but I don't think you would agree, right, that the Chargers moving is not the same as like Cleveland moving.
Oh no, it fails in comparison.
Baltimore Colts moving.
No, see, like, my thing,
Bills have been around forever, and just Jack Kemp, OJ Simpson.
Yeah,
like if they moved to Toronto, it would be one of the bigger tragedies in sports for a fan base.
No, my thing with the Chargers is that, you know, for the city of San Diego, I know it brought a lot of good revenue for them.
Sure.
And the stadium proposal that they did have, the one that was the downtown stadium, I thought was incredible because it served purposes for other things that San Diego does, like Comic-Con. As far as, like, the team goes, nah. I mean, you know, Charger fans are Charger fans. I mean, they're, you know, it's Southern California fandom is weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
So, you know, I wasn't upset that the team moved. I was like, you know, for the city, you're talking about, I mean, and for San Diego as a whole, it's one of the best cities in America.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it is.
Without,
I mean,
without question.
Temperature-wise.
I have two cousins who live there, and they're never moving. Like,
yeah.
Never moving.
If you can afford to live there, that's where you're going to stay forever.
Uh-huh, forever.
And that was the whole thing. I remember John Madden talking about, I was like, God, this is one of the greatest cities to host a Super Bowl, except, you know, the NFL said, not in this stadium anymore.
Right, no way.
But
right.
And that was the only reason, is that, you know, we're now... We're missing out on teams, you know, showcasing or highlighting one of the best cities in America.
I will tell you, even in New Hampshire, even growing up in New Hampshire, it is hot and sticky and humid in the summertime. 2008, my family took a trip to California, see my sister and whatnot. We all went to the, you know, to Disneyland and all that stuff. When we went to the San Diego Zoo in July, I was like, it's 74 degrees with a cool breeze.
Mm-hmm.
I've never experienced that anywhere else in America in the middle of July.
No, you
even growing up in New England, I never was like, it's sunny, 75, and the breeze is cool.
I always,
it's incredible weather.
When I lived there, I mean, I lived in San Diego for 12 years, you had sweatshirts that you don't wear year-round. I mean, you never really needed a big winter jacket. I mean, I don't even remember wearing pants all that much except for work.
Right.
You know, but in the evening, didn't matter what time of the year it was, you needed a sweatshirt. And you know, and it doesn't fluctuate much. It's like, you know, in the wintertime, it's, you know, maybe it gets down to like 60 degrees. You had your cold days, but that was a week.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of the best temperature cities in America, and... Yeah, it's you know, we're just deprived of being there, and that was the biggest thing. It was like, oh, we're deprived on showcasing San Diego.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio. We'll get to your tweets coming up next as we continue. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and again, Ron at Ron Culver at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. I lost my rhythm there. I've had a rhythm for 3 years. I've had to say that, and I just butchered that. All right, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the good, the bad, the dumb coming up next hour. You don't want to miss that. We'll talk more about the Final Four. You know, Villanova and Kansas should be a, I don't know, decent game. I wonder about Justin Moore, though, being out for Villanova, how that's going to affect the game. Kansas could roll in that game. Jay Wright could figure it out. Connor Gillespie could be fantastic. I have no idea. I said earlier I think Duke and North Carolina should be epic. I think it should be historic. But I think Villanova, don't sleep on Villanova, Kansas. By the way, we were talking about Bills Mafia being one of the best nicknames for a fan base. Michael on Twitter, Red Sox Nation. Yeah, all right, I'll give you that. Were they the first nation? Or did they borrow that from somebody else? Because, you know, now everybody's a nation.
Yeah.
Right? Now everybody's like nation, nation, nation.
I feel like Red Sox.
I feel like Red Sox Nation was the first one.
But I also feel like it's newer.
Yeah, I do feel like it's been remember, around. It's not. I don't remember anybody saying that when I was a kid growing up.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't remember people talking about that. I
think the 86 kind of World thing. Series was going around. I don't remember saying, Red Sox Nation is going to be upset what you know, Bill Buckner just did.
Yeah, it's like Sweet Caroline at the Fenway Park. It's like, I don't remember any of that growing up. Like they didn't play that at all. Like, I don't know when that started, but it definitely wasn't around when I was a kid in the 80s and even in the 90s. So, you know, some of this stuff is new and it feels like it's been around forever. Red Sox Nation might be one of those terms. All right, it's Sports Map Radio as we continue along Wake Up Call. Hour two just ahead, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. And we'll get more into the Final Four.